You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always, from the coast of this wonderful show. And as you might be surprised, it is a preview day, which means usually it's Tony doing the podcast, but it's me today. If you didn't notice, Tony did the post game from Monday night's game against San Antonio, or Tuesday. I guess the podcast would have been up on a Tuesday, and I did not. We had a switcheroo. So on today's podcast, I am going to preview tonight's Bulls game, probably going to do that short, and then do a long segment on the Dallas Mavericks game, because that's kind of the, I think, the more interesting one. They played the Bulls already this year a bunch. Nothing's really changed. There's some interest in the Bulls, but the Bulls are still a pretty bad team. And the Mavs, who they've already played also, but have Luka, I think, playing tonight. It looks like, well, actually, I guess we'll see if he plays Friday. He's sick right now, but I'm going to assume Luka's going to play. I mean, I'm just going to make an assumption, and if he does, that would at least change the calculus a little bit, because they still couldn't beat the Mavs even without Luka, and Luka makes the Mavs exponentially better. But first, I want to open the podcast talking about some injuries real fast. You might have seen it, but the Pacers have a long injury list. Let's put it that way. That's probably the right way to put it, right? So if you look at their injury report right now, it's not great. So a team who was already down, Jeremy Lamb, obviously, for the season, is looking at injuries to basically, so Brogdon is right now is, I think, doubtful to play on against the Bulls tonight on Friday, which means, and Vic is questionable. Both Vic didn't play last game, Barton got hurt last game, so that means they're already down there now. That's what they call that three guards if you add Lamb into there. And then you can throw on top of that the fact that Jakar Sampson is hurt. Let me find what he has. I forget what it was. And TJ Warren is hurt. And I know it keeps going. And Doug McDermott is hurt, right? So McDermott has a sore right foot and toe. Jakar, sore right hip, and Warren, a left leg laceration. All three of them are questionable. I think Warren, if I remember right, comes back from the Bucks game. I forget, might have been late second, early third quarter, where he kind of cut the back of his leg. They fixed it during the game. I don't remember him going to the locker room at all, but it kind of probably had a... It was probably worse than they thought. McDermott played really well against the Bucks, but must have been some kind of post-game, and Jakar must have been kind of thing. Something that kind of happened afterwards. If I do the math, that's five guys injured. I think Edmund Sumner's also hurt as well. But I think he's probably going to play, from what I understand. Let me look that up real fast. If Sumner doesn't play, then we're talking like they might have to call Nazmi Chulong up, right, to play that role. I guess we'll know more that later tonight. We'll probably see that. But I think Sumner's expected to play tonight. He's just had some injuries, right? So he's got a – he has got a left hip injury, but he played this week. That's kind of a patch injury, so he should be okay. So what that means is the Pacers are once again going to be probably in this jumbled lineup of players. We'll probably see Aaron Holland and McConnell start, or both. At least if Vic somehow returns, they can just kind of throw in Holiday, play someone on the bench or something like that. I would really, really doubt Brogdon plays. He's probably the most likely not to play. The rest are probably, obviously 50-50, but probably on the more likely side of things, just because none of their injuries are crazy. But also, it's the Bulls, so maybe you decide to let everybody sit, because you might be able to beat them without these guys, right? I don't think this Pacer team is going to struggle against this Bulls team, no matter who they play. Now, it might be closer than we like. Last one was certainly closer than we like, and everybody was healthy. That was the first game. Vic's first game back. It was a weird game. But I think, let's put it this way, if they didn't have, so if they miss Oladipo, Brogdon, and Warren, and McDermott, things get pretty dicey. But I mean, as long as they have Sabonis, as long as they had Sabonis, McConnell, and McDermott, I thought they'd be fine, because those are probably three players that are better than any player on the Bulls. But man, if McDermott's out, that leaves just, you know, well, it leaves a Miles Turner kind of crazy game and whatnot, so I guess we'll see. But just the injuries are piling up right now, this Pacers team. Hopefully they can get healthier. But man, it has been, I mean, you can't say they're any worse, because like look at Philadelphia, who's out Ben Simmons and Embiid. So I mean, like, every team has dealt with them this year, but man, they just seem to be piling up at the worst time, and it's right in the middle of this kind of crazy playoff race where the Pacers are only half game out of the 5 seed, 3 games back of the 4 seed. They're probably not going to get the 4 seed if they keep end up like 4 or 5 games back. There just isn't enough games left to make up, you know. Making up 3 games in 20 games is doable, but it's not easy. So they're really competing for the 5 or 6 seed. It's just rough. They have this kind of luck, but, you know, it's the way the NBA season flows and things happen. And when you play guys the amount of minutes they're playing, players, especially a guy like TJ Warren, who they've been fortunate till now, really hasn't gotten hurt, or McDermott really hasn't gotten hurt till now. Brodin obviously has had a history this season and in the past. So Vic, obviously injury history as well. So this isn't unpredictable, but it's certainly frustrating as this team tries to piece together some, you know, consistency for a few games to build some chemistry heading into the playoffs. But I guess we'll see what happens there. Let's take a quick break, and then I want to preview the Bulls game. So the Chicago Bulls are 21-41. They are not a very good team. So they have won basically 2 games since the end of January. So 2 games in February. For all February, they won 1 game, and they managed to win a game on the second day of March. They recently lost a game to Minnesota, and that's the game I'm going to look at just because of its parallels. One, because a couple Bulls players are hurt. You've got Chris Dunn, who did not play. Hutchinson did not play. Chandler Hutchinson did not play. Cornette and Zach LaVine did not. Zach LaVine actually not going to play tonight. So that'll actually be. So again, adding up all the Pacers injuries, that might not be the worst thing. Although I don't know, this team might be better without Zach LaVine because he's kind of a ball stopper, black hole kind of player. But so they lost to the Timberwolves 115-108, and LaVine did not play in that game. And that was the game where mainly Coby White and Lauri Markkanen kind of became the dominant players, right? So Markkanen had Shaquille Harrison had the most points. I'm thinking most took shots. Coby White took 22 shots off the bench. He had 26 points. Then you had 11 shots from Valentine, 11 from Thomas Satoransky. Thaddeus Young had 11 shots, and Markkanen had 10. And Shaquille Harrison had 17 points for them. Interesting with this team, I guess, is without LaVine, I don't think this team is as good, but I think there is something more there, I guess, right? So they had Otto Porter back by this time, right? We weren't sure he was going to play on the weekend when we previewed this game. But it sounds like their best player now probably is probably Coby White, and then probably Lloyd Markkanen. I don't think Shaquille Harrison's going to have like a, you know, what is Shaquille Harrison? I think he's a, I believe he's like a second or third year player, right? He played for Chicago last year, but never really, you know, he played 73 games last year, 16 minutes. He's a third year player, but just not really a name, I guess. But I guess he's been filling in for the LaVine role and whatnot. But the thing I want to go to with this Bulls team is that they're just bad. There's no two ways to cut it. And I'll probably look stupid when they lose to the Bulls, but man, like this Bulls team, it has really bad chemistry. It has not great coaching, and they just the players that they signed, like it just doesn't, there's not a lot of like cohesion or sense here, right? So they have kind of two young guys, right? So Markkanen, who I think, especially after his first year, was like, oh, this guy can be really good. Injuries, whatnot, set him back. Heads into his fourth year next year. Coby White, been really good too. So they kind of have that basis. But then they've got kind of this whole other team built around it, right? So they've got those two guys, and then you can throw in like Chris Dunn, who's hurt, and LaVine. I wouldn't even call LaVine a young guy anymore. I mean, he's 24. He's the player he is. But to me, this team is not going to be good until they sort of kind of push out all the kind of bad pieces, right? So, like, I think LaVine's a big part of this, where he's a guy who takes 20 shots a game. He has pretty good shooting percentages, but he just, like, doesn't really pass the ball very well, doesn't play really good defense. Like, he just really does one good thing, and that's not necessarily, like, enough for a team that's not super talented around him and then is rebuilding. And then the top of that, they threw in all these kind of, you know, veteran players who people like, but they just don't fit in a team that doesn't have like any good top talent, right? So you've got like Otto Porter, who I think is a pretty nice player, and he's been hurt a lot this year, so that's been a problem, obviously, with his team. Thaddeus Young, former Pacer, we all like him. I mean, he's not a great player, but he's a good player. He's a solid player. He provides you, you know, if you're a good team, he helps you win games, hence the Pacers last year. And Tom Satoransky was pretty good with the Wizards, same kind of thing, but the problem is they have this kind of like young core, Wendell Carter into that too, I guess, of like Coby White, Chris Dunn, Wendell Carter, Markkanen, where maybe I like one and a half of those players. You got Zach LaVine, who I don't like and who really is just kind of a drag for them. And then you add in like these like very middling kind of veterans who on a team with really good players add value, but on a team like this just kind of clog up things and make it worse, right? And you can see it. I mean, this team is just like across the board, they're just not good. So they're 26 in offense for a team that, you know, feel like should have better offensive players. They're actually an okay defensive team at 15, but they don't, you know, they don't have any real pace. They're just not very good. I don't know how else to put it. They're just not a very good team, and they just don't make sense. And that's why they're 21-41. And I assume the Pacers will probably beat them, even if they're missing four players. Let's take one quick break and let's preview the Dallas Mavericks game. All right, welcome back in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. All right, so the Pacers will take on the Dallas Mavericks on Sunday night, 7 p.m. Eastern in Dallas. This will be the fifth straight road game, last game of their five-game road trip that included a travel to Cleveland, San Antonio, Milwaukee, Chicago, and Dallas. So crisscrossing the country a little bit, right? Going out east to Cleveland, down south to San Antonio, back up north to Milwaukee, down a little bit to Chicago, and then back down all the way to Dallas. Not a lot of sense there to play San Antonio on a Monday and Dallas on a Sunday and travel back to Midwest between the middle of the week. Not a lot of sense in that schedule, but I digress. So the Dallas Mavericks have an historically great offense. They are an offensive rating of 117, nearly 116.9, and I think that ranks like all time in the NBA. I think when Tony was telling me on Sunday's podcast, that was like the all time, that was like the greatest offensive season in NBA history, right? Was right. So if you look at them, so let's I got it pulled up now. So if you look at it, their 116.9 offensive rating ranks number one all time, slightly ahead of the 18-19 Warriors, who had 115.9 offensive rating, and that was the team with Durant, Curry, Clay. In their, was that last year? No, that was their second to last. Yeah, that was their last year. Yeah, that was last season. And then the 86-87 Lakers, the Magic Kareem team that I believe won the title that year, being the Pistons, had 115.6. Warriors 16-17 had 115.6 as well. 15.5 for the 91 Bulls, and the 18-19 Rockets had 115.5. Man, Houston team got screwed the back. The Warriors were just that much better. That's the number one all-time offense right now. Now, not a full season, so that means something for sure. But it also means that this team is amazing, and I think part of that has to do with what has happened recently with Kristaps Porzingis. I picked him in fantasy. I traded for him, actually. And he's had like a very nice resurgence this season. He was not super great to start the year, and he had a little bit of slump, but I mean, and he got hurt for a little bit. But I'm going to take, since he returned from injury in mid-January, to take all those games. And we're looking at a guy averaging 24 points per game, 9.5 rebounds on 47-38 shooting, 47-38 and 84% shooting, which would put him right on par with where he was at kind of, actually it would put him at a better pace than his 16-17 season, or sorry, 17-18 season with the Knicks, where he was an all-star, where he averaged 22.27 points the season. He got hurt his knee towards ACL, but that was like his best season to date. And that's when, you know, he made kind of that superstar leap. And I think he's made it. I mean, to me, it looks like this guy is clearly one of the most talented offensive players in the league. He's completely back from his injury, right? So, like, you look at his overall style, and it's a little bit down, but I think you isolate some of those stats, and he has definitely made strides. I mean, he's been putting up 30-plus points, it feels like, every other night this season since he returned from his injury in mid-January. I mean, he's been really, really good. I mean, we're talking games of 28, 27, 28, 32, 38, 35. I mean, these are like, he is just putting up really, really good numbers. And he is kind of, you know, Luka, you can talk about Luka's 28.5 points per game, and Luka's a whole nother animal. But just when you have a number two like Kristaps, you can just rely on when Luka was out, or rely on a night when Luka's off, is just something. Or when they're both on, I mean, that team, it's scary. You add with that, I think Tim Hardaway's a really good third option on this team. He's shooting pretty well this year. He's shooting 40% from three. He's 44-40 and 80% shooting. Seth Curry off the bench obviously has been incredible, 45.3-point shooter, which I think of, let me pull McDermott's stats real fast, is actually better than McDermott from three so far now. And he's taking a much many more threes, right? So McDermott is averaging like 4.3 threes per game, and Curry's averaging 5.1. I mean, yeah, this Dallas team has got a bright future ahead of it, really, with Luka and Kristaps as their core. Especially with Luka on that rookie deal, so they'll have some free agency money, I think, coming up. I don't know if it's this year or next year. I mean, this team with, and then you add Rick Carlisle, a good coach, and they got a good owner. Man, this team has really had to kind of rebuild on the fly. You know, you look at it, you know, they were, since they won the 2011 title, they tried to compete for probably, what, 5 or 6 years they made the playoffs, even less than that, but they made the playoffs for 5 or 6 seasons. Then they were just kind of, I mean, they were competing, but they weren't going to make the playoffs, but they figured it out. They basically stole Luka because a bunch of teams were idiotic, from the Suns to the, who went to in that draft, right? The Suns, the Kings, and then the Hawks traded with them. Three teams that just, for some reason, thought Luka wasn't going to be the best player in the NBA, which everybody else thought he was going to be because he was the best player in Europe when he was 18. So he's just going to get better and better, obviously. And then they're able to make a very shrewd and take advantage of another idiot. I mean, the top two players they have are because of just stupid moves. Really, even top three, right? Tim Hardaway, same way. They basically took on Hardaway and you add in like Courtney Lee's contract and Hunsmell's contract to get Kristaps. In reality, Kristaps was worth 100%, and Tim Hardaway was a pretty solid player. Now, certainly overpaid. $18 million a year, I think, is what he makes. Definitely not worth that, but if you have to eat, let's say, I mean, if you add $6 million salary to Kristaps already, large salary is probably still worth it. Kristaps is a max player, the way he's been playing, and the way I think at 24 years old he's going to, you know, going to play the next couple of years, I mean, as long as he stays healthy. So, you know, and you can never, basically, in the NBA, you can never overpay for a max talent, like for a top-level talent, because of the max salary, right? So, like, you know, it's just part of the business, right? Like, if you had to pay, right? Here's the example I look at, right? So LeBron, right? You can never overpay for LeBron or Davis, right? Because their max salaries are like $35 million or $30-35 million. So, if you had to pay, that's kind of what the Cavs are, right? If you had to pay Tristan Thompson to keep LeBron, which is what the Cavs would say they had to do, that's still worth it, because that $53 million for LeBron is still probably less than what he's worth in the open market if he didn't have any max restrictions, right? Same, obviously, same thing with Kristaps. And then also you get a player, right? So, like, you get, you know, Thompson's probably worth like $6 to $7 million, maybe. Now there's issue with the cap and it doesn't screw you up, but Hardaway's being really productive. Yes, certainly you like to maybe pay him more like 10 to 12, but he's really productive for this team. He's a good third option. I mean, yeah, I can't say enough good things about this Mavs team, frankly, because they're kind of the one team out west that I like to watch, I guess. Because, I mean, I don't know. I'm not unique. I'm sure everybody is on this young team, but I guess maybe the Pelicans are the other one that everybody likes. I watched some Zion, but the Mavs are kind of the one team out west I like to follow because of Rick Carlisle, and I mean, I don't know. Mark Cuban's Indiana ties. I don't know. I've always been kind of a not a Mavs fan, but a Mavs, you know. I'm happy for the team, I guess, when they succeed. There's nothing about the Mavs' history is like they screwed the Pacers over or anything, right? So I just kind of enjoy watching the Mavs. And I think it'll be hard for this team to beat them, right? So let's see. So we'll see if Luka plays tonight. That's kind of the big thing, because Luka is out with an illness. So the last game they played, Luka and Kristaps did play when they played the Pelicans. They beat them by 4. That's a fun game to watch. So many young players. We're talking about four of the best young players between Zion, Ingram, Doncic, and Porzingis. But like I said, the big three for the Mavs combined for 82 points. Yep. You had 34 from Kristaps, 30 from Luka, and 18 from Hardaway. Off the bench, Curry had 21. I mean, this, like I said, this is, if you can figure out a way to take out one of those three players, you can probably win this game. But if you take out Hardaway, you probably still lose. You probably got to take out one of the top three and stop Curry off the bench. I'm just not sure there's really a way to do that. But I guess we'll see if McConnell can be a pest on Seth, assuming one of the guards is back, McConnell isn't starting. And then I guess you maybe hope that, like, Oladipo returns and can be a pest on Luka. Sorry, I sneezed there. I'm trying to season the mic. And then I guess you hope Turner can be a pest on Porzingis, but I mean, all of them are bad matchups for the Pacers. Hardaway's the only one that probably they can probably really stop if Warren's playing, and, you know, they can throw some different looks at him between Warren, Justin Holiday, and stuff like that. But I don't know. I don't think this. I think this is a bad matchup for this Pacers team. If they beat him, I think I'd be really happy and really surprised, but I wouldn't expect it. So that's where I'm at on this game. I think I think the Mavs are a pretty good team. Love to hear your guys' thoughts. You can tweet us at Locked On Pacers. You can tweet at me when we see happens this weekend. Hopefully the injuries get better for this team. A lot of questionable guys. Not a lot of major injuries, except maybe Brogdon is kind of the one to monitor. We'll see Oladipo's too, I guess, but I think Oladipo was expected, right? The swell need is expected to happen. It's just what happens with this kind of injury, so he'll hopefully be back and better and be fine in at least like a week from now. So let me hear your guys' thoughts. Like I said, at Locked On Pacers, I'm FreedomAdam5 on Twitter. You can follow Tony at TEASTNBA. That's all for the Locked On Pacers podcast. We'll bring you a show next Monday. For now, have a great rest of your weekend.